Maya sanchodita baba.
Maya sanchodita baba.
Sabe samhachakarina.
Sabe samhachakarina.
Undam utpadayam masu.
Undam utpadayam masu.
Mama yatanam uttamam.
Mama yatanam uttamam.
Maya.
Maya.
By me.
By me.
Sanchodita.
Sanchodita.
Impelled.
Impelled.
Bhava.
Bhava.
Elements.
Elements.
Save.
Save.
All.
All.
Samhatya.
Samhatya.
By amalgamation.
By amalgamation.
Karina.
Karina.
Functioning.
Functioning.
Undam.
Undam.
The egg of the universe.
The egg of the universe.
Upadayam.
Upadayam.
Asu.
Asu.
They brought into being.
They brought into being.
Mama.
Mama.
My.
My.
Ayatanam.
Ayatanam.
Residence.
Residence.
Uttamam.
Uttamam.
Superior.
Superior.
Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Impelled by me, all these elements combined to function in an orderly fashion and together gave birth to the universal egg, which is my excellent place of residence. Translation responsibly. Impelled by me.
Impelled by me.
All these elements combined to function.
All these elements combined to function.
In an orderly fashion.
In an orderly fashion.
And together gave birth.
And together gave birth.
To the universal egg.
To the universal egg.
Which is my excellent place of residence.
Which is my excellent place of residence.
Text 10. I myself appear within that egg which was floating on the causal water, and from my navel arose the universal lotus, the birthplace of self-born Brahma. Purport. The Supreme Lord here describes his appearance in his transcendental pastime form of Sri Narayana. Lord Narayan enters within the universe but does not give up his purely transcendental body of knowledge and bliss. Lord Brahma, however, born from the Lord's navel lotus, has a material body. Although Lord Brahma is the most powerful mystic, his body, which pervades all material existence, is material, whereas the body of the Supreme Lord Hari Narayan is always transcendental. Omagyan Timadandasya Kinunjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Hutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati swa badantikam Vancha kaupata rubyascha kripa sindhu bhyevacha Pititanam pavanebhyo Vaishna vebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityanando Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare
Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So Lord Krishna is continuing to speak to Uddhava about the creation of the universe. This particular chapter is called The Philosophy of Sankhya. What does Sankhya mean?
Counting.
Counting. It literally means counting or to analyze. This is called Sankhya Yoga. As we've mentioned before, in this 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, it is a summary of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. When you get to canto 10, canto 10 is called the Ashraya. Ashraya means supreme shelter. The supreme shelter is Lord Krishna. So therefore he is discussed elaborately in the 10th canto. The 10th canto is much bigger than the other cantos. 10th canto has how many chapters? 90 chapters. Most of the other cantos, the biggest canto I think is besides, or maybe the 11th canto, is already up to chapter 24. Third canto has 33 chapters, so it's a big canto. Fourth canto also has 31 chapters, so it's a big canto. But much bigger is the 10th canto, because the Bhagavatam is ultimately glorifying Lord Krishna. So now, 11th canto has begun. So 11th canto is a summary of everything which has been spoken before. There's nothing new within the 11th canto. It's just an elaboration of everything else which was discussed previously. So, Sankhya has already been discussed. Sankhya means the teachings of Kapiladeva in Canto 3 are called Sankhya Yoga. They are very elaborate descriptions of the creation. Now Krishna is going through it again to Uddhava, summarizing it or speaking it again. It is very similar. It is not so different to what is discussed, and just an elaboration. Maybe Krishna will make some extra points to make us understand the third canto better. So what is the point? If you're studying the Bhagavatam categorically, because Prabhupada says Bhagavatam must be studied systematically. If you're eating an apple, you can bite it from any side. You pick up the apple and bite it from that side, you can turn it around and bite it from that side. It tastes the same. It's sweet. So Prabhupada says you can pick up the Bhagavatam, you can pick up any canto. Just go to the Bhagavatam, pick up any canto, and it is sweet. It is nectarian. But still, Prabhupada emphasizes that ultimately it must be studied categorically, systematically. That's why Shukadeva Goswami spoke systematically. There is a systematic thread which is going through the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because it is not spoken historically, or it is not spoken... How do you say it? Another word. Chronologically. Yeah, you're right. Chronologically. It's not spoken chronologically or historically. In other words, in the first canto, you hear about Srila Vyasadeva, then you hear about Krishna departing this world, then you hear about Shukadeva Goswami speaking the Bhagavatam, the Maharaj Pariksit, and then you begin canto 2, and then Lord Brahma is creating the universe. So it is not systematic in one sense. It is not chronological. It is not going through like the universe in terms of from the beginning of the universe to the end of the universe. It's not going like that. But it is systematic. Shukadeva Goswami was not speaking haphazardly. He was not speaking randomly. He was not just saying, now I'll speak about this, now I'll speak about that. No, he was speaking very systematically. So therefore, you must study the Bhagavatam under a qualified teacher in order to understand the Bhagavatam. And then, if you study it, you will see there is a systematic evolution in the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. So why does Kapila speak the third canto? Why does he speak Sankhya Yoga? Because a lot of the third canto deals with Sankhya Yoga. A lot of the third canto deals with creation of the universe. It is spoken of three times in the third canto. The creation is gone through. In chapter 8, it is discussed, and then again, around about chapter 20, 21, I think it's discussed, and then again around about chapter 25, it's discussed again. Three times, the same topic. And when we taught third canto a couple of years ago in our Bhakti Vaibhav class, some of the devotees found it a little monotonous. To some extent, because the creation is discussed, and then it is discussed again, and then it is discussed again. And it's very detailed discussion of creation. I mean, every single element evolving like that. And then some of the devotees asked, why are we discussing this? What is the purpose of discussing this? I mean, it's okay, we can say in one class, but when you go in class after class after class and intricately trying to understand the universe and how it was created, then devotees say, why do I need to understand this in so much detail? The reason is because if you study it in the right mood, or if you study it in the right consciousness, it will help you become detached from matter. That is the point of the third canto. That is the point of this discussion of Kapiladeva about Sankhya philosophy. Because Sankhya means analysis. Now there is a system of philosophy which studies the material creation called Sankhya, which means they follow the process of neti neti. Not this, not this. Neti means not this. So you analyze this material creation. There are 25 elements within the material creation. So you see, what is it? It is the Mahabhutas, earth, water, fire, air, ether. Am I any of those? No, I'm not. That's what my material gross body is. So my gross body is one thing. I'm not that. Then you analyze mind, intelligence, and ego. Am I that? No, that is my subtle body. That is separate from me. Right? Then there are the working senses. Then there are the knowledge acquiring senses. Karmendriya, Gyanendriya. Right? Am I that? No, I am not that. Am I the sense objects? No, I'm not that. So once you've analyzed all of that, you've just come up with 23 elements. So I'm not any of these 23. Then what is the 24th? The Mahatattva, everything in total. Am I that? No, I'm not that. What is the 25th element? The soul. Am I that? Yes, good. Mahaprabhu passed the exam, so he understands. Yes, I am the soul. I am. What is the 26th element? Super soul, Paramatma. Am I that?
No.
No. I'm not Paramatma. Although sometimes I think I am. Paramatma. But I am not Paramatma. I am Jivatma. So, by analyzing this Sankhya philosophy, we understand what we are and what we are not. That is the purpose. Now, the Bhagavad Gita is a, you could say, a, how to say it? The Bhagavad Gita is spoken in sutra form. What is a sutra? Sutra is a truth which is spoken very concisely, very compactly, very essentially. A sutra means an essential truth. So the Bhagavad Gita is an elaboration upon Vedanta Sutra. Now, it is the final exposition of the Vedanta Sutra, which means it is spoken in sutra form. Each verse is a very concise truth. So within the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna analyzes Sankhya. He analyzes the difference between matter and spirit. That is how the second chapter begins. Krishna analyzes the difference between matter and spirit. Now the Bhagavatam is an elaboration upon the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita. It is Bhagavad Gita being elaborated like that. So we are to understand the difference between matter and spirit. This is Sankhya, this is Jnana. Krishna speaks of Sankhya Yoga in the Bhagavad Gita. He speaks of Jnana Yoga in the Bhagavad Gita. The whole purpose of this is to understand the difference between matter and spirit. So it is essential, it is necessary. We must understand what we are not before we can understand what we are. You can't understand you are the pure spirit soul if you still think you are the material body. Hands up if you understand that you are pure spirit soul. Good. Theoretically we understand it, but we do not realize it. Theoretically we understand, yes, I am pure spirit. But we don't understand it. We still identify with the material body. Right? But just like we might think, I am pure spirit soul. Right? We all understand that. But then one moment later, nice girl walks by, and then you're... Okay. Right. Then you forget. Instantly. One moment before, you understand I'm pure spirit soul, and the next moment, you're identifying with the body once again. Through the... false ego. False ego is the junction between matter and spirit. There's no contact between matter and spirit factually. Factually, matter and spirit never mix. There is no actual contact. But there is identification. How does identification take place? Through ahankara, or false ego. Through our false ego, we think, I am the material body. But factually, you are not the material body. But we think like that. So Krishna gives this deep analysis to break that understanding. That is why we study the Bhagavad Gita. That is why we study the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's why when Shukadeva Goswami spoke to Pariksit Maharaj, he didn't say to Pariksit Maharaj, "Oh, now you have 7 days to live. Let me go straight to the 10th canto and tell you about Krishna's pastimes." He didn't do like that. He spent first, say, 4 days, if you look at the Bhagavatam in Tari, the first 4 days must be in the first 9 cantos. Or maybe even the first 5 days. Must go on to the 4th or 5th day. He was speaking the first 9 cantos. Because Prabhupada says that if you study the first 9 cantos systematically under a bona fide spiritual master, then at the end of the ninth canto you will be a God-realized soul. Then you'll understand God. So why did Shukadeva Goswami speak like this? Why is there a systematic progression in his teaching the Bhagavatam? Because actually he was teaching the Bhagavatam for us. Pariksit Maharaj was already liberated. Just like in this conversation, Uddhava is already liberated. Why is Krishna telling all this to Uddhava? He's already liberated. This is being spoken just before Dwarka disintegrates. Krishna could be speaking other things to Uddhava at this point. But no, he's going through this. And then he orders Uddhava and he says, "Now you go to Badrik Ashram and you speak to the sages there who did not get my association while I was on earth. 125 years have passed, I'm about to leave this world. Now you go to Badrik and you speak to all the sages who are my devotees who did not have a chance to directly associate with me." So this is the point of why Krishna is speaking so much elaborate philosophy. Now we see here, in these two verses, it says, "Impelled by me, all these elements combined to function in an orderly fashion and together gave birth to a universal egg, which is my excellent place of residence." So the Lord enters into each universe. The Lord is lying in the Mahatattva as Mahavishnu, who's known as Karanadakshaya Vishnu. Now Karanadakshaya Vishnu, while he is in his yoga nidra, his transcendental slumber, he begins to breathe. And each time he breathes out, universes come out of his pores. And when he breathes in, the universes retract back into his pores. So this is what is taking place. At the moment, are we going in or out? Wrong. We're coming back in. Half the universal time has already passed. Lord Brahma is about 54 years old at this point in time. How long does Lord Brahma live for? 100 years in his time, right? Of which over half has passed. So it is around about, he's probably around about 54 now. So Lord Brahma is halfway past. That means the universe has gone out as far as it goes. Now we're on the way back in to Mahavishnu. So you better become Krishna conscious pretty quick. Because the universe is going back in. And if the universe gets back in, and if you're not Krishna conscious, then what happens? You go back into Mahavishnu and you go to sleep. For how long? Right? 311 trillion years. You go to sleep for 300. Do you want to wait another 311 trillion years until you can have a chance to chant Hare Krishna once again? Be serious. Don't waste time. What does Prabhupada say? Don't waste time. Become Krishna conscious in this lifetime. Don't wait for the next one. Because if you leave this universe, if you don't become Krishna conscious before the universe goes back into Mahavishnu, you have to wait all that time and then you have to come out again. And that's another 311 trillion years. Like that. So it's a long period of time. So therefore, Prabhupada emphasizes, do not waste time. So, in each universe, which is shaped like an egg, a golden egg, then the Lord expands as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and he enters into each universe. Now when he enters into the universe, which is shaped like a golden egg, right, he lays down in that universe, and then he becomes very hot, because it's like being in a sauna, like a very small space for him, and the universe is so big. Garbhodakshaya, Vishnu is lying down in it, right? And it's only big enough just to hold him. So because it becomes a little hot from being contained in the universe, then he begins to perspire. That perspiration becomes the Garbhodaka ocean. And then he lies in that ocean on the bed of Ananta Shesh. So he's lying there, and then from his navel sprouts a lotus flower. And then Swayambhu means self-born, Lord Brahma manifests. Not like us, we manifest by the combination of father and mother. No father, no mother, just manifest, Swayambhu, Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is sitting on, this is in Canto 2, Lord Brahma is sitting on top of the lotus flower, and he thinks, where am I? That is the same as everyone who comes into this universe. Everyone who comes into this universe, right, when we come into the universe, what takes place? We think, where am I? What am I here for? What is this about? I don't understand. I am in avidya. Avidya means ignorance. We are born in ignorance. There are three things that are common between us and Lord Brahma. He is born in ignorance. We are also born in ignorance. He does tapasya. We are also doing tapasya. And he attains enlightenment. We are also striving to attain enlightenment. So these are the common features. Everyone who comes in the material world has to go through this system. You're in ignorance, you perform tapo divyam, brahma sokyam. You perform transcendental austerity and you become Krishna conscious. That is the system. So, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, he then expands as Shiradakshaya Vishnu into every atom of the universe, of the creation. And it is said in the Bhagavatam that from Shiradakshaya Vishnu, all the avatars, all the incarnations of Krishna manifest within this world. When they enter this world, they enter through Shiradakshaya Vishnu. So the Lord comes again, Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I come again and again and again. Sometimes people say, where is God? He says that he will come whenever there's irreligion. There's a lot of irreligion right now. Where is he? But factually speaking, he was here a few moments ago. Because if you look at one day of Lord Brahma, how long is one day of Lord Brahma? How long is one day? 100 Divya Yugas. That is one day of Brahma. Right? So what is a Divya Yuga? You take Kali Yuga. How long is Kali Yuga? 432,000 years. How long is Treta Yuga? Sorry. Dwapara Yuga? 864,000 years. How long is Treta? 12,000? 1,200,000? How much is it? 64 plus 32. How much is
96.
That? 96. Okay, 1,296 years. And then how long is Satya Yuga?
1.7.
We need the exact figure. It's about, yeah, it's about 1,700,000 years. It's like that. Right? So then you combine all of them together. Right? You combine the four yugas together. How long is that? 4,320,000 years. So you put 1,000 of them together, and then that is one day of Lord Brahma. Right? So people say, where is God? So if you look in Lord Brahma's timescale, God was here a few seconds ago. Right? His name was Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was here a few moments ago. Right? And we're still feeling the effect of him being here. Because he was here, then all of us are chanting Hare Krishna. So you cannot say he was not here. You cannot say, where is God? No, God has literally been here a few moments ago in universal time. And he's standing here right now. Gaura Nitai. Srila Prabhupada has called this Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir. Prabhupada stood right there and right there, and he bathed Gaura Nitai and installed them, did the Abhishek. When Prabhupada installed Gaura Nitai in 1975, then Gaunitai were the biggest solid cast Murtis of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda on the earth. Solid. You see, when you go to Mayapur, you go to Navadvip, and you buy the Murtis, usually buy like Murtis of Gaunitai like this, like that size. Right? But they never made them this big before. Solid. It took 6 devotees to carry each one of them onto the altar. Now there are some bigger deities of Gaunitai, solid. They are sitting, or they are standing in Sri Mayapur Dham. They are called Sri Pancha Tattva. They are even bigger. They are 7 foot tall, solid deities of Gaunitai and Advaita and Gadadhar and Srivas. So the Lord manifests again and again. Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. He comes again and again into this material world to give Krishna consciousness. So he manifests through Shiradakshai Vishnu. And then he appears in these different incarnations through the different ages to teach the different processes of religion. Now, not only does the Lord himself come, but he sends his pure devotees. Because the Lord, in order to deliver the conditioned souls, he is constantly sending his pure representatives to deliver the fallen conditioned souls. So, on this day, today is the appearance day of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Appearance or disappearance? It is appearance. Yeah. So today is the appearance day of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he is appearing within this material world as a pure representative of Krishna, of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in order to carry on the mission. It states in the Krishna Bhajanamrita by Narihari Sarkar, he says that whenever a great acharya leaves this world, there is a period of chaos. It is a common feature. You saw when Prabhupada left this world, there was some chaos. ISKCON had some problems in the middle 80s, like that. When Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur left this world, there was chaos. All the Gaudiya Math, which was his mission, factioned, and there was court cases and all sorts of things. When Lord Chaitanya himself left this world, there was chaos. 13 upper sampradayas manifested. 13 sampradayas who said that they were following the true teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifested, and each one of them was a deviant sampradaya, or a sampradaya which had deviated from the pure teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All sorts of philosophies sprung up. This is common. When a great personality disappears, there is a period of chaos after they disappear. So our Vaishnava sampradaya, it had to be kept pure by our disciplic succession. We come here to the temple and we sit down and we listen to class and we go to the kirtan and we take darshan of the deities and we go and eat as much prasadam as we can. But we don't often think that all of this is only taking place because of the mercy of our disciplic succession. And it wasn't easy for our disciplic succession to keep these teachings pure throughout the last 500 years. There was a great amount of oppression and a great amount of difficulty, a great amount of austerity had to take place. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they had to establish Mahaprabhu's mission in Vrindavan after he disappeared with great opposition. The deities in our movement, which were established by the Goswamis, they had to be moved out of Vrindavan to Jayapur just to be protected, because the Mughals, the Muslims, were destroying the temples. The temple that Rupa Goswami built for Radha Govinda, which is a 7-story temple, was desecrated, and the 5 top stories were knocked down. Because the Mughal ruler, who was living over in Mathura, could see at night time, he could see the light on top of the temple, because the temple was 7 stories high. He said, "What is that light?" They said, that light is coming from one of the Hindu temples. He said, "Go and knock it down, it's too tall." Oh, it's very funny, isn't it? You know, the Moguls, yeah. The Moguls have destroyed our temples. Right? So a great deal of austerity had to be done by our acharyas. The deities had to be moved. The only original deity of our sampradaya still in Vrindavan is Radha Raman. Right? Radha Raman, the devotees had to take out into the middle of one of the kunds in Vrindavan at night time on a boat with bows and arrows to protect, so the Muslims would not come and take the deity and take him away. So our acharyas had to go through so much difficulty. So by the time the movement came to around about 150 years ago, the Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya, the Gaudiya Vaishnav movement, was not held in very high esteem by the Bengal aristocracy. People who were very respectable, very cultured, they did not look upon the Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya, which is the pure Sampradaya coming from Lord Chaitanya, as being something very respectable. Because there were so many upper Sampradayas, there were so many deviant Sampradayas representing Lord Chaitanya, so-called representing Lord Chaitanya, that people could not tell if the Gaudiya Vaishnavas were actually the pure followers or not. So the movement was not respected. The movement was not spreading. There wasn't like a huge Hare Krishna movement 150 years ago in Bengal. So then, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he appeared as a pure devotee of the Lord. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he himself studied all the different religions. He studied Christianity, he studied Islam, he studied Buddhism, he studied all the different religions, he studied all the different Vaishnav Sampradayas, and then finally he studied this Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. He studied the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he realized, after he'd studied all of these different teachings, that this was the purest and highest and most revealing teachings that existed, that he had studied about the science of God. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he became a Gaudiya Vaishnava. Now, he was such a powerful personality that he was employed by the British Raj. Now, you have to understand that 150 years ago, India was subjugated by the British. Indians were not seen to be very significant or important. The British kept them in lower positions. They occupied all the higher positions within the government. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was made a court magistrate, which means within the British government, in India 150 years ago, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the highest placed Indian-born person in the British Raj. They had so much respect for him. They gave him a whole district, and he was in charge of the whole district on behalf of the British. They had so much trust in him. His character was so high. His ability was so high. He was so confident in the court, it is said that someone would come into the court and they would hear the case. You know, like these days when they have a court case, how long it goes for? Especially these days in India.
Yes.
Right, court cases go for about 20 years, right? Like that. So even in the West, you know, court cases drag on. Just like a few years ago, they had the court case for O.J. Simpson in America. Famous, famous, famous court case. Went on for 1 year. Just to work out if the guy was guilty or not. You know? Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to take 6 minutes. Right? The guy would come into court, the criminal. Bhaktivinoda Thakur would sit there and say, "What is the offence?" They would read the offence. Bhaktivinoda Thakur would look at his face, and then he would give his verdict. Right? And then he would write down his verdict and say, "Okay, send him to prison," or "Let him free," like that. Like that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur took him 6 minutes. Whereas all the other judges, they were doing one or two cases a day, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, all the British judges. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was doing like 30 a day or something like that. So he was becoming very popular with the British, right? Because he was doing his work so well. He was so well. And he was getting more and more respect. So then all the other judges they went against him to try to bring his reputation down. He was such a highly placed personality. So he was given the district of Jagannath Puri. So he was living in Jagannath Puri, and at that time when he was living in Jagannath Puri as the court magistrate, he took over the he took charge of the Jagannath Mandir. And while he was in charge of the Jagannath Mandir, he made sure that all of the aartis and all of the offerings, which are numerous every day, he made sure everything was running perfectly on time, right? And the system was very, the standard of worship had become very high, because there was some discrepancy. The system of worship in Jagannath Puri had become somewhat compromised. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur lifted it up and he made sure the Jagannath temple was being managed and run perfectly. So then he became more and more interested in studying the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then he asked for a transfer from Jagannath Puri, being the court magistrate, to go to Krishnagara, which is very close to Navadvip, to Mayapur. So then he asked the British government, and that was a smaller area, and he was running Puri, which was a large area, he was running that very, very well. They were very satisfied with his service. So when he requested that he wanted to move to Krishnagar, become the judge in Krishnagara, they said no. They said, you stay there. And he said, okay, I resign. He said, I'll resign, and then I'll go and live there. So they said, no. So then they gave him the jurisdiction of Krishnagara. So he went there, and he built his house in Godrumdwip. And then the little railway, if you've been there, there's a little railway just outside the house that was built by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And I think the same train that Bhaktivinoda Thakur used is still going past. Like that. It looks like it's the same train. It's about looks like it's about 100 years old, the train that goes past. Like that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he built the train line. So he was living in Godrumdwip, which is directly across the Jalangi from where Antradwip is, which is where our temple, where the ISKCON temple and the yoga pit is. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was living there, and every day he would walk out, right? The train would come, it's only a little train, like a little kind of carriage thing. He'd go out, sit on the train, and it would take him up to Krishnagar. He would act all day as the court magistrate, as the judge, and do his work. And then when the day was finished, he'd get back on the train, come straight to his door, get out, go in, and then he would begin his devotional service, like that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is often called the Grihastha Acharya. He teaches all the devotees how to be a perfect Grihastha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself says that in Kali Yuga, Grihastha Ashram is a very good position for Vaishnavas, because it is safe. Because within Kali Yuga, it is very difficult for devotees to be renounced, because the atmosphere is so contaminated. It's difficult for devotees to stay renounced. Brahmachari, sannyasi, it's difficult in Kali Yuga. You don't see so many like that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he recommends in Kali Yuga in general, not everyone, but in general, then people should follow Grihastha Dharma. So therefore he showed the ideal example of Grihastha life. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had 12 children. Most devotees have got one or two kids. Right, imagine having 12. Right? He had 12 kids. He was... Most devotees have got jobs. Is anyone here a high court judge? You know, it's a very... It's a huge position. You become a high court judge and have 12 kids at the same time. Right? And see what it's like. Right? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this was his ashram. Simultaneously, he was completely empowered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to re-establish the Sampradaya, which had become obscured since Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left the planet. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his desire was when he retired, he was going to go to Vrindavan with another devotee and just chant Hare Krishna at Radhakund. And then Lord Chaitanya appeared to Bhaktivinoda Thakur in a dream and said, I want you to go to Navadvip and excavate the yoga pit and excavate Gaudiya Mandal, the pastime places of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya came in a dream and gave him that order. He said, you go to Navadvip and you re-establish my holy dham of Mayapur, which is the dham which we take shelter of in Kali Yuga. So, he was living there. He would come home from work. And then if you read his daily schedule, you will understand how much Maya you are in. He would go to bed at 8 o'clock and he would get up at 12 o'clock. Then he would begin to write transcendental literatures. He wrote over 100 books, of which some of the books are the most important books in our Sampradaya. In the Gaudiya Math, they base basically most of their study upon his books. Jiva Dharma, Harinam Chintamani, Bhajana Rahasya, Chaitanya Shikshamrita, and there's many, many other books, right, which he wrote. Gitavali, so many books which he wrote. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote prolifically, and then he would, it is said that when he got up in the morning to take bath, it would take him 12 minutes from when he got up until when he was ready, with tilak on, dress, everything. Right? Some of the brahmacharis think they're fired up. I can do it in 15 minutes, I can do it in 20 minutes, like that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, 12 minutes, like that. Because he was did not waste any time in serving Krishna. So he would get up, get ready, right, and then he'd begin his service, writing. Then he would chant his rounds, right? And then, after chanting his rounds, he would chant 16 rounds, as we do. After chanting his rounds, then he would go out onto the balcony in his little house in Godrun. He didn't have, like, even though he was a court magistrate, he had a very simple house, right? He would go out on the balcony and he would walk up and down on the balcony and he would discuss philosophy with himself sometimes. He would give arguments and he would defeat the arguments. And he was in his head, he was continuously, and that, all those things he would write in his books, like that. And then, if there was anyone who wanted to meet him, they would come and meet him. He would leave half an hour or something in the morning to meet special guests, because he was a very high person. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it is said, he is called the seventh Goswami, exactly like the six Goswamis. Shad Goswami Ashtika we sing, Dira, Dira. He was dear to the sober and to the ruffians, to the gentlemen and to the ruffians. It is said, no matter who came to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house, he would receive them like an honoured guest. He was a very simple person, very, very simple person would come, or a very high position person. He would treat them with all respect, exactly the same. Whoever came to his house, no one was ever turned away. They would get prasadam, they would get sweet words. He was perfect in his Grihastha Dharma. He had a pure devotee wife, her name was Bhagavati, who was also a pure devotee of Lord Krishna, and who assisted Bhaktivinoda Thakur perfectly in his Grihastha Ashram. Then he would eat prasad. If you see what he ate for prasad, it was very simple. He would have something like, I can't remember, I haven't looked at it recently, but he would have like 2 chapatis and a quart of milk. A glass of milk and 2 chapatis, like that, and then wash his mouth, and then get on the train, go down to work, go to do his court duties all day, 10 o'clock till like 5 o'clock at night, and do his court duties. When he was in Jagannath Puri, he used to come home for an hour. Come home, take a bath, take prasad, right, and then go back to the courthouse. When he was living in Krishnagar, I don't think he was doing that because he was a little bit further away. So he'd go and he'd take bath, eat very simple prasad, right? And then get at the end of the day, after doing all his court duties perfectly, then he would get back on the train and come back. Right? And then he would, in the evening, spend another couple of hours studying the literatures of the Goswamis, take his evening prasadam, spend some time with his family, take rest by 8 o'clock, get up at 12 o'clock, and then do it again. This is ideal devotee life. So Prabhupada said we need to reduce our eating, reduce our sleeping, so we have more time to serve Krishna. Like that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of his greatest contributions was to rediscover the exact place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had appeared. Because when Lord Chaitanya left the world, the Ganges moved several times. And because the Ganges had moved several times, no one was sure where the exact place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had appeared. So many people were saying it was on the Navadvip side of the Ganges, not on the what we call the Mayapur side. It was on the other side of the Ganges. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not sure, so he would look at all many old maps, and then he saw there was a place called Mayapur or Mayapur on the other side of the Ganges. So he was having a very strong feeling that it was Mayapur was on that side of the Ganges. So then he asked many of the old residents of that place, and they said, yes, actually, this is the place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. So then, there was one particular place, and it was like a little, because there was mainly Muslims living at that place. And there was a place, it was like a small mound of earth, and they had tulsi plants growing all over it. And the Muslims, they would not go near that place, because normally they would use everything for farmland, but they would not go. They would say that place is haunted. They would say at night time we hear all sorts of noises coming from that place, so we don't go near that place. It is like some haunted place. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur thought this is very mysterious. There is tulsi growing everywhere, right? The Muslims will not touch it. So then he had the feeling that this was the place. He then saw it in a vision. He was chanting on his balcony. Actually, this was in Navadvip. This wasn't in Godramdvip, but this was in Navadvip. He was staying in the Dharamsala, and for two nights he was chanting, and when he looked across the Ganga in the evening time, he saw a great light coming from this particular place. And then he saw that, and then he said to his son who was with him, he said, did you see that? He said, there was some light, effulgence coming from that place. So then he went, and then he thought that he discovered the actual place. So then he took Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who was his Shiksha Guru. And Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj was around 120 years old at that time. He was so old, they had to carry him in a basket. His servants would carry him in a basket. So they took, Bhaktivinoda Thakur took the devotees and Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj to this particular place, which he thought was the yoga pit, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had appeared. And then when he got to that place, then Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj jumped out of the basket. He was 120 years old. And he said, Nimai, Janmabhumi, Nimai, Janmabhumi. This is the place. This is the place where Nimai appeared. Like that. And he began to dance. He said, this is Nimai, Janmabhumi. Like that. He was in ecstasy. And the Bhaktivinoda Thakur knew that Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj had revealed this was the actual place. So then the yoga pit was discovered. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he built a small temple at that place. He personally went to Kolkata, and he went from door to door in Kolkata, knocking on people's doors, and then he'd say, please give a donation so that we can build a temple for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Mayapur. And he raised the money and he built a small temple. Then he ordered his son, Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, to build a big temple. And he built a big temple there in 1930, around about that time. And then ISKCON, under the order of Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada developed the Mayapur Vrindavan Trust. ISKCON developed the Kirtan Mandap, which is the big hall, which is in front of the ISKCON, gave the donation to develop that in. And ISKCON has developed a charity trust. Prabhupada instructed Jayapataka Swami and others to develop a charity trust to give donations so that they can improve all the temples in Mayapur and Vrindavan, like that. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he spent many years living there in Godramdvip, and it is actually predicted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He said one night he had a vision, and he said he looked across the Jalangi from Godramdvip, and he looked across to Antadvip, where our ISKCON property is, and he said that he saw an Adbhut Mandir, which means a astonishing temple. It was predicted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and it was also predicted by Nityananda Prabhu 400 years ago.
Vedic planetarium.
Yeah, temple of the Vedic planetarium. So 400 years ago, Nityananda Prabhu also predicted this. He said to Jiva Goswami, he said there will be an Adbhuta Mandir, right, an astonishing temple will be built. So fulfilling the order of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his divine grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, he installed Anantasesh in the soil in Mayapur and instructed his followers, Ambarish Prabhu and others, to construct an Adbhuta Mandir. And this year in Mayapur we began the groundwork to build this Adbhuta Mandir, to build this astonishing temple. And Lord Prabhupada said, when the temple opens, the King of England and the President of America will come for the opening of the temple. This temple will be so astonishing. And he said, from this temple is predicted, the Lord Chaitanya's mission will spread all over the earth. So this temple is being built right now. They're putting the pylons into the soil to build the temple. Stainless steel pylons on which they will build the temple. It's costing $6 million just for the pylons to go in. The actual dome of the temple is going to be gold plated. It is going to cost $15 million to gold plate the dome of the temple. This is a serious temple. This is the biggest temple on earth. This temple will be the biggest temple on earth. Like we're all sitting here for class, the Kirtan Mandap, when devotees sit down for class, it will be 1 acre in size. 1 acre means, you know how big this temple property is? Like for the back fence, like that? That's how big the Kirtan Mandap will be. So we know it'll sit, 10,000 devotees can sit down at once and listen to the Bhagavatam class. So this temple is coming. We will see it manifest. It'll take 7 years to build the superstructure and then another 5 years to complete all the ornamentation on the temple like that. So the Bhaktivinoda Thakur predicted this temple would come. One time in Mayapur, the devotees are watching a slideshow show with Prabhupada, and on the slideshow a picture of Bhaktivinoda Thakur came, and one of the devotees indicated, he said to Prabhupada, he said, "Prabhupada, you are fulfilling Bhaktivinoda Thakur's mission. You are making the whole world Krishna conscious." And Srila Prabhupada said, "Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur could have delivered the entire universe. But he was very kind and he left us some service to do." Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki. Like that. So today is a half day fast. You should absorb yourself in meditating upon Bhaktivinoda Thakur and praying for his mercy. He is the most powerful acharya in our line. He is watching over this Krishna consciousness movement. He is constantly watching over this movement, protecting this movement. So it is by his mercy that this movement is going on like that. So today we remember him and we pray for his special blessings. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. Yeah, some of them also became, some of Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur's brothers became very noteworthy sadhus also. They also became very prominent devotees. I think one of them wrote a biography about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Like that. So some of them were very prominent devotees themselves. But out of all of them, Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur became the most prominent. Like that. But if you read the Seventh Goswami, if you read the biography, it mentions about the other children a little bit also. So. Okay. Any other question? Comment? What time is the Harinam today? 5 o'clock Harinam. 5 o'clock Harinam in honour of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur for World Peace Day. We are spreading peace all over the world. The United Nations have not done it yet. They're not able to bring peace. The only thing that can bring peace is the Sankirtan movement. On Saturday, we will go to the grand final, which is the Ashwamedha Yajna. For the non-devotees, it is their most important day of the year. Right, and is the sum and bonum of all of their activities. It's their Maha Yajna. So we will go there and teach them what is the actual purpose of human life, like that. Not just to run around a field in shorts and kick balls. There is more to life than this. That's something you do at the farm. You know, you're just having a retreat. So, you know, you want to have a bit of, you know, like a relaxation with your friends, then you play a little bit of ball. You don't go and build a whole stadium, put 100,000 people in it, and then watch people kick a ball like that. It's not the point of human life like that. So we will go there to try to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, take advantage of the sacred gathering to spread Sankirtan. Srila Prabhupada ki.